2018. And of course, this is the world we live in. You're going to be your host for the next, roughly the next hour. And I just want to quickly get into what I wanted to broadcast. Last night, there was a candidate forum for the circuit for two couple races that voters will be able to choose for the Champaign County Circuit Judge and the Champaign County Executive. And this is part of, I won't be able to play the whole forum, and the whole forum was a few hours, so this is just a part of the Champaign County Circuit Judge forum. And this is the candidate. This is Roger Weber, and I believe Ramona Sullivan. So I'm getting that queued up. And so this is Roger Weber, who is, I believe, running as the Republican, and Ramona Sullivan, who is running as a Democrat, again for the Champaign County Circuit Judge.
What specifically influenced your decision run for this position based on your own background and experience?
I don't know how many of you know how judicial spots work at all. There are 14 circuit judges in the Sixth Circuit. Those are supposed to be elected positions, although, as I alluded to earlier, it's been a very long time since voters had any say in that. There are also 11 associate positions in these counties, and the 14 circuit judges are the only people who have any say in who those 11 people will be. I have applied for several vacancies. The time in 2012 when I applied for an associate vacancy and I had an ISBA bar poll, I know that people talk about those, my results were incredibly good. I not only didn't get an interview, but I didn't even get told I wouldn't get an interview. I just got to see in the paper who was hired. In 2014, there was another position open. They didn't do a poll. I didn't get an interview. Again, I found out in the paper. In 2015, they did a poll, but before they did the poll, I got a letter from the presiding judge letting me know I wouldn't get an interview. There's absolutely no other way I will ever get to the bench than an election. The circuit judges do not, as far as I can tell, value what I bring, whether it's my gender or my political leanings or the fact that I've always been a legal aid attorney. I don't know what it is. My bar poll results are always very good, and it doesn't open the door. So I'm running because this is an opportunity to open a door.
The most direct answer to that question is I was serving as an associate judge in four of the small counties in our circuit, and I was advised that Judge Blackman was going to retire, which would create a vacancy. Judge Blackman had the family law call for about 20 years. The same day or the day after I learned of that vacancy, I was approached by two Champaign attorneys that happened to be having a family law case in Douglas County, and they asked me whether I would ever consider applying for that spot or running for it, and so I started to think about doing it. I talked to a lot of other people in the community, and I got a lot of encouragement, so I did apply. It was a little bit of a leap of faith, giving up the security of the associate judgeship, knowing that I would have to go through a campaign and may or may not still have that same job. But I did. I held my nose and took the plunge, and here I am today. My opponent mentioned the bar polls and being turned down or not even interviewed. I applied for an associate judgeship about 7 or 8 times before I was ever selected. My lowest score on the bar polls ever was about 93% on any interview.
Okay.
Let's
start off with this. All right. It's very good to see a contested judicial race on the ballot. There's this person. In fact, not just one, but two. Why have there not been more in the past? What can citizens do to see more of these races in the future?
I think the reason that there aren't more contested races is because once a person is elected as a circuit judge, they never run in an open election again. They just stand for retention. The strange thing is that to win the election, you have to get more than 50% of the votes. To be retained, you have to get a 60% approval rating. It is still rare that judges are not retained. However, recently in St. Clair County, down by St. Louis, 3 sitting circuit judges resigned their seats effective December 1st, and then immediately took out petitions to run because they believed they could be better, get a better chance of getting 50% than 60% of the votes. I think two of the three were successful, but I don't remember. So the bottom line is, if circuit judges are elected, if they're doing a good job, the voters keep them. They just end up, so there's not an open contested election again until somebody dies or retires.
I suspect that the reason there aren't more contested elections is because of the way this process has been working for the last 20 years. Every circuit judge we have was appointed as a judge before they ever ran for anything. Every single one of them, by the time they ran for anything, got to run as a judge with a robe. All their signs said Judge So-and-so. Most of the lawyers in the community think that it's just going to be too much of an uphill battle at that point to run against somebody who's already in the black robe. That's the reason I believe you haven't been able to vote for anyone in such a long time. Every one of them was appointed. This might also be an interesting time to bring up that 14 out of 14 of them are Republican. I don't know for sure. I can tell you that it really is as hard as it looks to run against a sitting judge. It's awkward. I see Judge Weber in the courthouse fairly often. We're very civil. We're very professional. It doesn't make it any less awkward because we both won the same seat. And he's in it. Thank you.
We're getting close to the end. Do I have time for one question or two?
One more question.
One question? Okay. So let me get started. This one. In your opinion, what are the most important duties of a circuit court judge?
They're all so important. I think the way that you run your own courtroom is probably the most important. The way that you treat the people who appear in front of you is probably the most important. And I don't just mean the litigants, although that's obviously very important. I mean their lawyers, I mean the courthouse employees, I mean all the people that come in. Judges who treat people well are a dream come true, and most of the judges are that way. Having been an attorney for 22 years and practiced in about 15 counties, I can tell you that that's not always the case, but it affects everything. If the judge that you appear in front of is somebody who's going to have a temper, it affects whether you raise an issue that you should raise or not because of the consequences that that's likely to trigger. The only way that you can practice law competently and appropriately in a courtroom is to believe that the judge is going to have the right temperament, is going to have the right judgment, is going to treat people appropriately and allow you to raise issues that you should raise without being afraid of how they're going to possibly blow up. Thank you.
I believe that the absolute most important thing that a circuit judge does is vote on an associate judge. And the reason for that is the way I run my courtroom and the decisions I make affect the people in that case. The associate judges that we appoint affect hundreds or thousands of people in their cases. I can also tell you, since I've been a circuit judge, I've been through that process twice. Once we settled upon a male and once we settled upon a female. Gender was never, ever discussed during our deliberations about which attorney we should appoint. Politics was never, ever discussed. What we talked about was, have we seen these people in court? How do they handle themselves? Have we ever seen them have a temper tantrum? Do they know the law? Do they care for their clients? Are they aggressive but fair? Do they do a good job? And do we believe they have the proper temperament to be a good judge? Those are the only issues we discuss. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I think I was rushing you guys, so we have time. And I still have other questions, but we don't have time. The rest of these people are fabulous at
questions.
Okay. What are your views on sentencing youth as adults? Is there an age cutoff in your mind?
Well, there's an age cutoff that is set by the legislature, so what I think really doesn't matter. I have to follow the law. Now, having said that, there are certain age ranges where we have to look at various factors, the nature of the crime. There are some crimes that are automatically bumped up to felony law court. But there are others where we have to listen to a lot of evidence about this person's background and disposition and make a decision about whether they should or should not be tried as an adult. Fortunately, I have not yet been called upon to make that call. I think that would be an extremely difficult call, and I can see both sides. If you have a 14 or 15-year-old who commits a horrendous multiple murder, rape, stabbing, burning a house down, it's very tempting to say that person should go to prison for a long, long time, if not the rest of their life. On the other hand, 14-year-olds are still developing. Their brains aren't fully developed. Who knows whether in 5 or 10 years they're going to be a completely different person. So that's probably a very, very difficult call that I ever had to make.
Sentencing, I think, for all people should be a lot more about rehabilitation than about most of the other things there, and that's certainly mostly true for children. Children do have the ability to so grow and change and mature, and I believe, I mean, as Mr. Weber said, that's 100% the statute tells you what you can or can't do. Sort of what I also alluded to earlier, there are a lot of times that the statute just tells you what you can or cannot do, and you have to follow the statute, because that's, judges are not elected to make these laws. Other people who you've also been seeing at forums are elected to do that. But the point of court generally should be to try to solve the underlying problem and let people move on, let people heal, let people become productive members of society. And that is absolutely true with the children.
Thank you. Now we come to the time of our closing statements. And the way this works, they flipped a coin, as we said before, and Mr. Weber had one, so he opens first, and then he also closes first. There's some thinking that it's what you hear first is what you remember, and some thinking that what you hear last is what you remember. So we give them an opportunity to do both. So, Mr. Weber, the closing statement.
Right. 2 minutes?
Yes, 2 minutes.
It's been suggested that it's an uphill battle to run against a sitting circuit judge, and I suppose to a large extent that's probably true. We do get to call ourselves judge out in public. We get to wear the robe. We get our name in the paper if we're involved in cases of any interest. But the counter side of that is we have a record that we have to defend. I've been doing this for 4 years now, and every case that I decide, there are two attorneys and at least two litigants, all of whom may come away from that hearing very, very unhappy with me and very angry. They may hate me. They may swear I'm never voting for that guy. So I think the fact that after doing that for 4 years, my overall bar approval rating is still above 97% speaks very well of the way that I have handled the job so far. The bar poll ratings, I believe, are important because, and I just read a blog the other day, and there's copies of it on the back. Wouldn't you love to be able to interview all of your congressmen about your congressman, all of the other senators? What does my congressman do? Does he come to work? Does he work hard? Does he get along well with others? Wouldn't that be useful to know? Guess what? For judges or judicial candidates, that information is available because all of our peers in the bar, all of the lawyers are given a poll and an opportunity to say this judge does or does not possess these qualities, which are good to be a judge: integrity, legal ability, lack of bias, temperament, and my scores have always been very high. My overall approval rating, after 4 years of taking a chance on making an enemy with every decision I make, is still over 97%. I would love your vote and the opportunity to continue doing that good job for the next 6 years.
Thank you. I went to law school back in 1993 because I wanted to help people. I think that's why the overwhelming majority of people go to law school, is they have this thing in their heart that they want to help people, and I think that's a tool that they can use to help people. And that is what I've actually ended up doing. A lot of people during law school or after law school decide, oh, money sounds better, or oh, power sounds better, oh, something better is coming along than this helping people idea I used to have. But that has not ever happened to me. I want to help people. That's what I do. I've been an attorney for 22 years. I get paid taxpayer money. You can see online what I get paid. It's $57,000 a year, which is significantly less than most of my classmates were getting paid the year we graduated back in 1996. I'm not in this to get money. I'm not in this to get power. I'm not in this to get popular. I'm trying to help people, and that's what I do. That's what I do at work all day, every day for 22 years. That's what I do in the community all day, every day. I volunteer in schools every year. I've created a program called Domestic Violence in Illinois Law that I teach to high school students to try to help kids not grow up to be batterers or victims. The best way to deal with domestic violence is to not have it. And I don't know why we're not all trying to not have it. I don't know why we're not all in schools talking to people about how to not batter and how to not tolerate abuse. It's so obvious. I don't think there's any other lawyer in the state probably who's done as much domestic violence work as I have from both sides, both representing victims who need protections and representing batterers who need to change. I've done so much of that type of work, and those are the things that come through the courthouse all day, every day, as you can imagine, in every courtroom. And I think I would be better equipped to make decisions about those cases than most people. I'm also running to try to balance this bench. We have 14 circuit judges. Everyone's a Republican. 13 of them are men. There's no diversity at all. And I think we need diversity. We need more than one perspective represented in this judicial system. Thank you very much.
Again, and hopefully if you're having trouble hearing, you might need to turn up the volume as much as you can. I might have to end this some of these forums early because it doesn't seem like the audio is very loud, and I apologize for that. I got up as close as I could as when I was in the forum with my microphone. So so again, that was Roger Weber and Ramona Sullivan with their forum at the and they're running for Champaign County Circuit Judge. And again, this debate, which I'll crank up as loud as I can, is also two candidates running for I believe there's two circuit judge positions that voters will be voting on come November. And this is Randy Rosenbaum and Chad Beckett.
What interactions does a circuit judge have with the circuit clerk's office?
I noticed in the last debate that everybody kind of struggled on the answer because there are two separate offices. The circuit judges handle the casework. The circuit clerk's job and her staff is to maintain the records of the court. So they have all the court files. They keep a lot of the exhibits. So we don't necessarily have a lot of day-to-day contact. Most of our contact is our clerks, the judges' clerks, will be in contact with the circuit clerks, there's too many clerks, to obtain the files that we need every day to ensure that they're properly filed, that we have all the documents in there. We do have a lot of contact with them because we've gone to integration with electronic filing. In civil court, such as what I handle, all filings have to be electronically done, so I've had to work with the circuit clerk about electronic signatures and the like. I was one of the ones spearheading it for our county. I was, along with Judge Benjamin, she and I, she's here tonight, we're working to work through all the glitches so it will be easier for all the other judges.
Thank you.
Following up on what Mr. Rosenbaum said, the circuit clerk is the backbone of the courthouse. They make sure that every file gets where it needs to be, every order, every pleading, every notice gets where it needs to be. They keep track of the money, they keep track of the fines. They keep track of the minimuses. It's essential. And on a daily basis, both between the clerk's office down on the first floor and with the minute clerks that are working with the judges, that interplay is essential. Judges really don't know how good they have it in circuits like ours. There are other areas where there may be one clerk that has to sit downstairs and take the documents, and the judge upstairs more or less has to write out their own orders or write out their own docket entries. A good relationship with the circuit clerk's office has been essential. In private practice, I work with Katie Blakeman's office regularly for electronic filing and also just basic information exchanges, and I will continue to do so when elected.
Thank you. What county court practices, policy, or facility would you like to see changed in the next 5 years?
I believe that the circuit court, as it is in the Sixth Circuit, in the larger counties, particularly in Champaign County, has become too insular. By that I mean one judge handles one kind of case forever. I don't think that necessarily leads to the best result. There are other circuits like the Fifth Circuit, which is Coles County, Vermilion County, Hickman County, etc., where those judges rotate. They hear a kind of case like the family law call for a couple of years, and then they do something else. Or they hear the probate docket for a few years, and then they do something else. We end up getting this notion that we have to do something a certain way because this is how that judge does it, in my opinion. And we can have a better informed judiciary. We can have better judges who are more conversant with the different areas of the law if they actually find themselves handling different areas of the law.
We have a wonderful drug court, a great success rate. I'd like to continue doing that. I'd love to expand it into mental health court. I'd love to expand it into veterans court as well. I think that it's important, as Chad says, that judges rotate. Our associate judges tend to rotate every 2 years. I would have no objection to rotating circuit judges. It's above my pay grade. That's up to the presiding judge. Frankly, I would love to get out of family court. It's a stressful job. I think I was 3 inches taller and had a full head of hair when I started 2 years ago. But I think they have a consistency for the lawyers. You know, when I was a lawyer and we'd be in front of a particular judge, we say, this judge is really tough on sentencing, but is consistent. And then this other judge, wow, sometimes you get great sentences, but you never know. Consistency is not necessarily a bad thing. I also think it's important for judges to meet with the lawyers and let them know their practices and the protocols. I do that as a family law judge, meeting with the family lawyers pretty much on a quarterly basis, and I think other judges should do that as well.
The question is, why should we care about the circuit judge race? What impact does it have on our daily lives?
Picking governor is important. Picking attorney general is important. They have big policy decisions. But I'm not sure if there are any other people on the ballot who are going to affect your lives on a day-to-day basis more than a judge. If you get a traffic ticket, you're in front of a judge. If your landlord's evicting you, you're in front of a judge. If you have a small claims complaint, if you're going through a divorce, you're going to see a judge. Most of you know someone who's been in front of a judge. That's what's vital. And our job is not to make big policy decisions. Our job is to deal with what's in front of us. And you need to elect people who you know, who you think will do a good job. I also think that it's important because we run one time, you get a 6-year term, and then unless there's some kind of a scandal, pretty much, you're retained. So whoever you elect is not going to be here for just a few years. We'll probably be here until retirement, and that's important for us to understand.
I sure shall.
Sure.
Any other questions? Why should we care about the circuit judge race? What impact does it have on our daily lives?
I want to thank the person who asked that question. I think we heard it first in the previous debate as well. Building on what you just heard, every single person will be affected by what a judge does. Everyone in this room, one way or another, will be affected by a circuit judge, either because they are in front of a circuit judge or because of an associate that a circuit appointed. That is why diversity is important. That is why broad economic and socio backgrounds are important. We have to have a diverse judiciary. We have to have people who have a broad range of experience. We have to have people that are grounded in the community, people that have a good temperament, people that have that track record. I think I have that. I think that I can bring that to the court.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm going to just stop that there and just hopefully the audio for will be the Champaign County Executive Forum between Gordy Holton and Darlene Klopel. And I believe you can go to, I believe, either the Facebook of the News Gazette or the Champaign City Council. We'll have the whole debate. So if you're having trouble with the audio, which again I apologize, I did my best to try to get the audio as loud as I could when I edited this. But I'll go on to the next forum. And again, this is the Champaign County Executive Forum between Gordy Holton, who I believe is the Republican, and Darlene Klopel, the Democrat.
In the last election, voters said they wanted an elected leader who would represent all of the county's residents, not just some special interest groups or some geographic districts of the county. They thought it made sense for all voices to weigh in before important decisions are made. I'm running for your first county executive because I'm interested in finding solutions to the county's complex issues that residents feel are both informed and fair. During my campaign, I have walked door to door in every city, town, and village in the county to meet with folks from all walks of life. I've also held 12 town hall meetings to listen to residents' suggestions for how the county can do better. I've started an executive to-do list and will continue these venues for public input going forward. The county executive will preside over the county board meetings, prepare the county budget, manage the administrative activities of the county, and represent the county at negotiations and public events of all kinds. That's a lot of responsibility for an office that simply requires county residents in order to run. I want to assure voters that I have the formal education and hands-on experience to handle these duties with confidence and integrity. I hold master's degrees in social work, architecture, and city planning. I have successfully started up new positions, programs, and agencies while working as an employee, a national consultant, and for 15 years as the Community Services Director at the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission. I have managed 10% of the county's $130 million budget and supervised 45 staff, which incidentally is the current number of county administrative staff. I'm not a career politician, but I do have 40 years experience managing the politics to bring new ideas to fruition. With those skills, I will add significant value to this new office, and I'm asking for the opportunity to work on your behalf for the next 4 years.
Thank you, Ms. Klopel. Next, we will have Mr. Holton.
Thank you. My name is Gordy Holton. I'm the Champaign County Clerk. I've been your Champaign County Clerk since 2011. Prior to that, I served on the Champaign City Council. I'm married to Pam. Pam raises money for Carl's philanthropic arm, supporting things like groundbreaking medical research and charity care for the neediest in our community. We have two children. Will is going to be 11 on Thursday, and Kate is just turned 7. It's past their bedtime, so I hope they're asleep, but if they're not, they're Will and Kate. I'm grateful to the League of Women Voters and to the NAACP and to the News Gazette for organizing tonight's forum. I am excited to run to be your first Champaign County Executive. I have a significant amount of experience in local government and a significant amount of experience of community involvement in Champaign County, and I have based my campaign on three priorities, and those priorities are straightening out the fiscal management of Champaign County. The finances of Champaign County have been enormously damaged by the mismanagement of the Champaign County Nursing Home over the previous decades. It includes building an economic development operation in Champaign County government, because I think that regionally, the folks around us look at Champaign County like we should be leading our region in economic development efforts. I have some experience and some skill set in economic development, and I look forward to working on those tasks. And then finally, working on an independent redistricting plan so that we can return competitive elections to the Champaign County Board, and we can ensure that moving forward, voters are picking their county board members instead of county board members picking their voters. I ask for your vote November 6th, and I appreciate your attention tonight. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Holton, why do we need a county executive? What value do you see this position adding?
The county executive, as Ms. Klopel stated, was adopted by the voters of Champaign County in a referendum in 2016. I supported that referendum. The largest motivation that I had supporting that referendum was not because I was interested in running. At the time the referendum was on the ballot, I was certain that somebody else was going to run. But I think it's important that we have a countywide elected official who is the leader of county government, rather than choosing one of our county board members who happens to be elected by the members of one political party at a primary election in a gerrymandered district. And so I think it's important for all of the voters of Champaign County and all the citizens of Champaign County to have a voice in who leads Champaign County government. And so therefore, I think county executive form of government is a very appropriate experiment for us to try in Champaign County.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klutwell, why do we need a county executive? What value do you see this position adding?
The county executive form of government is a very big change for Champaign County. It is much different than the current county board form of government, which allows the board itself to basically govern and then also do the administration by appointing someone to a position to do that as a county administrator. The executive will bring to the county the ability for there to be one person that will have another voice. So the county executive can also call public hearings or set up committees for research or advisement and have disagreements with the county board, basically, if they think something is in the best interest of the county. That sets up a check and balance system, which can also lead to gridlock, but it can also mean that there's one person that's listening to all the different voices and trying to come to a consensus, which I think is of value.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klutwell, what is the most important problem you will try to solve?
Boy. The most important problem that I will try to resolve, I think the county has several problems right now. One is its fiscal security. And I will say that we have had some difficulty in the past several months with regard to the nursing home, which people viewed in many cases as the only financial issue the county had. That certainly is not the only issue the county has with finances. There are some other things as well, and I think that we need to take a longer range view and come up with a vision so that we have a direction that we're going toward. So my goal would be to have a vision longer than anyone's term, actually, a six-year vision, past my term, past everyone's term, that we can work toward to come up with a plan for the county to move toward.
Thank you. Mr. Holton, what is the most important problem you will try to solve?
Well, I think the most immediate problem the county executive will be tasked with is sort of repairing the financial management and the finances of Champaign County government. But I think the finances have gotten to this point because the root cause of the problem is that the culture of county government has been broken by excessive partisanship, and it has gotten progressively worse over previous decades. And it's a problem that's been exacerbated by both parties. And so the biggest challenge that the county executive will face and that I intend to try and tackle in my term as county executive, is to try and change the culture of county government and the county board in working with the county board to try to limit the influence of partisanship and the poison of partisanship and the effects that it's had on the decision-making in county government for so long.
Thank you very much. Mr. Holton, if you become county executive, what do you want to be remembered for when your term office comes to an end?
That's a tough question. I've talked with friends for years about my 8 years as county clerk and said that the thing that I think we will be most remembered for, despite all the accomplishments that we've had in the clerk's office that I'm very proud of, is the issuing of same-sex marriage licenses that we did in February of 2014 in advance of state law taking effect in recognition of a court case in Cook County, that there was some debate about whether or not it applied statewide or whether or not it applied only to Cook County. And so if I have an opportunity to have a similar impact as county executive, I would like to be remembered, I think, for having that culture change affected so that the partisanship that has split county government and caused so many problems in county government, that we could begin to tamp that down and hopefully address it in the next couple of years.
Thank you, Ms. Klutwell. If you become county executive, what do you want to be remembered for when your term of office comes to an end?
What I would like to be remembered for is that I really listened to people and what they were saying, and that I tried to find a solution that would benefit the people. That I think there are a wide variety of opinions in our county. When I've been walking around the county, I've heard from a good number of folks in very different circumstances, and I would like to see if I can leave behind me the sense that people were actually heard and that what they said made a difference in how decisions were made. And I think that that can be done through having more public input into how decisions are made, through better decision-making processes, which I hope to bring to the board in terms of decision-making tools that will focus what we're doing on the project at hand and try to reach some decisions that are more win-win, more a win-win type of scenario.
And again, I'm just going to stop the recording there of the candidate forum. I'm a little bit disappointed that the audio isn't very good. So, but you can listen to it, I believe, on the Champaign City Council. I believe on you can, or even maybe even the News Gazette's Facebook page or website. I know they will be replaying it on the City of Champaign, the Champaign City Council Chambers television or the public television channel. And I will, I'm hoping to also reach out to the, all these candidates for, you know, for Champaign County Circuit Judge and Champaign County Executive and have them, again, you know, explain more on where they stand on certain issues, why they're running for these positions, you know, before November come. I believe it's the midterm election will be November 6th. It's always the first Tuesday of November. So, yeah, November 6th, Tuesday. And again, make sure you are registered to vote. You can go to, I believe... In Illinois, you can go to, if you want to make sure you are registered to vote, you can go to the Illinois online voter application at ova.elections.il.gov or .gov, or you can just go Google, you can just Google like register to vote. It should be the first result, Illinois online voter registration, and that will tell you, you know, what you your what you need. We have to be to vote. Of course, you have to be a U.S. citizen. You have to be 17 years old. You have to be 18 by the date of the general election. If you could have been 17 during the primary election to vote as well. But and of course, you must live in your election precinct at least 30 days prior to election day, and you must. And you can't have the claim the right to vote anywhere else. So just again, yeah, because we're only about, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. So it's coming up. So just get the. So just make sure you're registered to vote. Not have no unpleasant surprises come election. Come election day. So I'm going to read some public service announcements. These are the art theater listings for the week of Friday, September. So yesterday, starting yesterday all the way to Thursday, September 27th. Screening daily is The Wife, a film that examines 40 years of give and take. And take and give some more. I'm not sure why it's written. Between literally literary lion Joe Castleman and the person who knows him best, supports him steadfastly, resents him deeply, and possibly loves him anyway, his wife Joan, played by Glenn Close. And again, that is the film, The Wife. Late night weekend movie is 1975's Deep Red in 4K restoration. One lonely night, a musician looks up from the plaza below and witnesses the murder of a woman in her apartment. Racing to the scene, Marcus just misses the perpetrator, or does he? As he takes on the role of amateur sleuth, Marcus ensnares himself in a bizarre web of murder and mystery where nothing is what it seems. You can celebrate Art House Theater Day, September 23rd, at the Art Theater, enjoying the newly released Foreign Body. The plot revolves around Samia, a young woman who illegally arrives in France following Tunisia's Jasmine Revolution, where she seeks refuge from her Islamist radical brother, whom she informed on. In her new home, Samia discovers a world of both hope and danger. And rush tickets will be available for the Tuesday night screening of Summer 1993, following the death of her parents' 60-year-old. Frida moves from Barcelona to the Catalan province to live with her aunt and uncle, who are her new legal guardians. The film is a memorable look at our desire to connect and belong and the unexpected ways in which families can reshape and grow. And for all up-to-date times, you can go to the Art Theater's website, which is www.theartheater.org or O-R-G, however you like to pronounce it. And of course, we this is something we have been trying to make people, the public, know here at WEFT. We here at WEFT were recently informed of an issue with our broadcast tower. To stay on the air, we are making plans to relocate our antenna and transmit in the next few months, and this is going to cost approximately around $50,000, which is an anticipated expense that approaches our annual budget. If you are interested in helping to keep this community treasure operational, you could do so in one of several different ways. First, you could join WEFT as an individual member, and of course you can go to weft.org. And if you have a business, you could become an underwriter for WEFT programming. If you know of possible grants or other types of funding, you could share that information with us. Or you could even partner with WEFT on your next fundraiser. And WEFT can provide people power as well as free promotion. And for more information, you can send an email to station manager, that's one word, so station manager at weft.org. And of course, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. And so I'm going to transition to, as you probably have, if you have been paying attention to what's happened in the news, the big story with the Supreme Court Justice, Judge Kavanaugh, who's been going through hearings with the Senate Judiciary Committee, and a woman has come up and accused him of a sexual assault that happened, I believe this was in the late 80s, and she has been called to testify, and there's been kind of going back and forth on when her name is Christine Ford, or she's referred to as Dr. Ford. And the latest news on that, and this is the Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, has on Friday night, this was last night, he has been trying to give her an opportunity to when she will testify to the Senate. Senator Chuck Grassley agreed late Friday night, and this is according to an article I'm reading on CNN that was published this morning, Saturday morning, has agreed to, I believe, give Dr. Ford an extension to when she can proceed with making a statement of testifying to the Senate. The Senate Judiciary Committee has given Dr. Ford's attorneys a deadline of 2:30 p.m. Saturday, so I believe that's today. So if this story has been updated, it's possible. But the panel, there has been a proposition of holding a hearing next Wednesday from both Judge Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford, according to a source which hasn't been identified yet. Judge Kavanaugh has denied the sexual assault allegation that has been, a committee earlier Friday set a deadline supposed to be 5 p.m. Eastern for Ford to, and so now it's been extended to 10 p.m. And so it's been kind of going back and forth on when to give Dr. Ford and her lawyers to decide when she whether or not to testify in front of the Senate committee. So this has kind of been an ongoing story, and a lot of people, the media has brought up how this compares back to the Anita Hill, who gave a testimony against Clarence, during the Clarence Thomas hearings, Anita Faye Hill, who was an attorney and she's currently a professor, who was set in October 90, this was 1991, after, I believe she had a private interview, which leaked out. She gave a hearing and accused Clarence Thomas. There was accusations against Clarence Thomas that he had sexually harassed Anita Hill while she was the supervisor at the Department of Education and the EEOC. Clarence Thomas had allegedly harassed her, and she said she wanted so I'm just gonna play, instead of trying to read everything, I'll just play the Anita Hill testimony. This is part of an excerpt of the Anita Hill testimony. This was, I believe, the second hearing with Clarence Thomas. This was 1990. This was 1991, and I believe it was October 11th. And this is the Anita Hill testimony, and I want to give thanks to the Film Archives YouTube channel for having this video available before I forget. So, without further ado.
Gail Laster.
G-A-I-L Laster, L-A-S-T-E-R.
And what was the conversation which you had with Gail Laster?
She asked me some general questions. Then she asked me if I knew anything about allegations of sexual harassment or tolerance of sexual harassment at the office of the EEOC, in particular as they related to Clarence Thomas.
And what was your response?
My response was that I did not have any comment on either of those.
And what did she say when you told her that you had no comment, as opposed to no knowledge of any tolerance or sexual harassment?
I believe we might have gone on to something more general about the nomination. I don't believe the conversation lasted very long after that.
Well, what was in the conversation?
As I said, we went on to more general matters regarding the nomination.
You don't recall the specific contents of the conversation?
Oh, we talked about general issues involving women in the workplace, what I thought of his views on that, on those issues.
What happened next?
On September 6th, Ricky Seitman called me. I returned the call on that day. And she asked me some specific questions about some work that I had done at the Department of Education. We spoke about that work, and she asked what role I played in doing it. And then she again asked me about rumors, or did I know anything, or had I heard any rumors while I was at the EEOC involving his tolerance, Judge Thomas's tolerance of sexual harassment.
And what response? Yep.
Thank you. Or whether I knew anything about his actually being engaging in sexually harassing acts.
And what was your response?
At that point, I told Ms. Seitman that I would neither confirm nor deny any knowledge of that.
Anything further in that conversation?
At that point, I think again, we might have moved on.
Might have moved on, or do you not recall the specifics of the conversation?
I will complete my thought here. At that point, she said, are you saying that you will neither confirm or deny your knowledge, or are you saying that you will neither confirm or deny that the actual harassment existed? And I told her it was the latter.
What happened next?
I told her that I wanted to think about it and that I would get back to her.
Think about what?
Think about this issue of sexual harassment.
Did that conclude the conversation?
That concluded the conversation.
What happened next?
I think in the interim, on the weekend of September, over the weekend of September 7th or 8th, I spoke to Ms. Seitman again. I did speak to her again. And I asked her specifically, if I were to discuss this matter, where should I go? That I wanted to talk with someone who was knowledgeable about the issue before I proceeded to tell what I knew. At that point, what I was trying to do was to really determine, get some sense of how the committee would approach this and give some, take some effort to weigh what I thought was valuable information. But I wanted to do it from a more objective viewpoint.
And what did Ms. Seitman tell you?
At that point, she told me that she knew someone who worked on the Senate Labor Committee, James Brudney, who would have information, who had worked in the areas of sex and sex discrimination, and that he would be able to give me some indication of the law, and that she also said that she had his telephone number.
Well, why would you need someone to give you an indication of the status of the law, considering your own knowledge of sexual harassment and the fact that you had been a civil rights professor at Oral Roberts Law School?
I had not practiced in the area. I have never actually practiced in the area. I've taught in the area, but it's been, I haven't taught in the area since 1986, and I understand that this is a very fast developing area of law. In addition, I wanted a more objective evaluation of my situation, and I wanted to do it with someone who I could trust. I knew James Brudney, and I wanted to talk with him so that I might be able to make that evaluation.
So Ms. Seitman recommended Mr. James Brudney.
She gave me his name, and I indicated that he was someone who I knew and who I thought had integrity and who I could trust with confidential information.
Okay, and then you did talk to Mr. Brudney?
Yes, we talked.
And when was that?
Well, I have, we talked on the weekend of September 7th and 8th.
And what was the content of that conversation?
Actually, I'm sorry, that's incorrect. We talked on September 9th. The content of the conversation was really, tell me something, what do you know about the development of sexual harassment? If I disclose to you certain facts, can you make an evaluation of some kind as to what kind of legal conclusion one might make?
So that at that time there was a doubt in your mind as to whether Judge Thomas was in fact guilty of sexual harassment on the facts as you knew them.
Well, I want to back up and say something here. In my statement to you, I never alleged sexual harassment. I had conduct that I wanted explained to the committee. My sense was, my own personal sense was, that yes, this was sexual harassment. But I understood that the committee, with their staff, could make that evaluation on their own. So I didn't have any doubts, but I wanted to talk with someone who might be more objective.
Well, you did call it sexual harassment in your extensive news conference on October 7th, even though you did not so characterize it to the FBI or in your statement to this committee.
But that news conference on August 7th had not taken place at the time, on October 7th had not taken place at the time that this conversation was made.
Well, the statement to the committee and the statement to the FBI hadn't taken place either.
The statement to the FBI had not, you're right.
So that you made statements to the FBI during the week of September 23rd, and you furnished this committee a statement on September 23rd, both of which occurred after your conversation with Mr. Brudney. But in neither of those statements did you conclude that Judge Thomas was guilty of sexual harassment.
I had reached in either of which statements?
You did not tell the FBI that Judge Thomas was guilty of sexual harassment, did you?
I don't recall telling them that he was guilty of sexual harassment, no.
Well, you didn't characterize his conduct as sexual harassment.
I did or did not?
You did not characterize Judge Thomas's conduct as sexual harassment when you gave the statement to the FBI, correct?
Well, Senator, I guess I'm not making myself clear. I was not raising a legal claim in either of my statements. I was not raising a legal claim. I was attempting to inform about conduct.
But you did raise a legal claim in your interview on October 7th.
No, I did not raise a legal claim then.
Well, I...
And yeah, that was the Anita Hill testimony during the Clarence Thomas hearing in, I believe it was October 1991. That was televised on C-SPAN. And again, thank you to the Film Archives YouTube channel. Before I go... YouTube channel. I have just one more PSA I forgot to read. Did you know that you can host a party at Urbana Park District facilities? The Anita Purves Nature Center and the Urbana Indoor Aquatic Center rent out space for people of all ages. For the little ones, the Nature Center offers parties with a nature theme, and kids always have fun swimming inside at Urbana Indoor Aquatic Center. For more information how to rent park district facilities for a party, you can call 217-367-1544. Again, 217-367-1544. And that will be it for my show, The World We Live In. And I hope you enjoyed it. I apologize about the audio issues I had for the judge candidate forums and the county executive forums. I'm going to play a song by Annie DeFranco from her album Binary. This is Pacifist Lament. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Home from work, buy some flowers, walk. your hand for a cup of tea, be delivered to a nightstand, for a light to be